Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
Hi there, and welcome back to another edition of Mysterious Radio. I am your host, K-Town, and here on Mysterious Radio, you're going to hear about everything. I cover the whole gamut of the strange and bizarre. And if you're into true crime, I invite you to listen to our new show that's just been rebranded. It was the X Podcast. It is now called Seven, and it is strictly a true crime podcast where I will be interviewing the best authors in true crime, psychologists, researchers, and witnesses on the most infamous serial killers and homicides of the 20th century. So if you're interested in that, please make sure you check it out and subscribe. If you're already subscribed to the X Podcast, then you're already subscribed to Seven. We've just rebranded that podcast, okay? Before we get on with tonight's edition, I want to give some love to two listeners that took the time to leave me a fantastic rating and review. One of those is Epic Kimberly, and she says she's new to podcast. She says, I'm old school and I found K-Town and she is fantastic. Her voice draws you in. Topics are what I want to listen to and the guests are awesome. Keep doing all the different podcasts and I'll keep following you. Thank you very much, Kimberly, for that one. And then we have Laser Light Lover. Hey, I like that. Your voice is amazing. Better yet, you ask all the right questions while conducting the interviews. I feel enlightened. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you very, very much for those reviews. If you would like to get a shout out from me and let me throw some love your way, please take a moment to leave me a 5-star rating and review on either Mysterious Radio or my true crime podcast called Seven. And how you find that, don't put the number seven in there. Just spell seven out and you'll find it. Okay, so I have a very special guest tonight is Andrew Goff. And he's a writer and enthusiast of ancient lands, mysteries, and traditions. He is a presenter of television documentaries on historical conundrums and mysteries and has been featured in popular programs on History, Discovery, National Geographic, Smithsonian Travel, Science, and many other channels. He is also the co-founder of Project Restoration, an initiative aimed at reclaiming the Earth's hidden histories, and his website is andrewgoff.com. You spell Goff, G-O-U-G-H. I'm very glad to have him on the show. I actually flew him in from England to come to Knoxville to lecture, and he was fantastic. I was very, very happy to meet him in person. I've seen him on television for years, and his presentation was very well received, and he's welcome to come back here anytime. Okay, so tonight Andrew is going to be discussing inner earth, and that's always something I love to hear about, and I know you do too. And Andrew has an interesting story about someone he has met that has told him some amazing things about inner earth. So I'm going to dig in and ask some great questions, and let's see what he can tell us about it. All right, it's time, and I want you to pull up a chair and sit right beside me as I bring out our special guest, Andrew Goff, here to talk about inner earth. All right, Andrew Goff, my special guest. It's been a minute, Andrew. How have you been doing?
Doing really well. Thank you. I'm excited to be on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
The last time we spoke, you were in Knoxville for Alien Expo, but what have you been up to since then?
Yeah, you know, it's been really, really busy. I've had a number of programs that I've been doing for some upcoming television shows, a relaunch of Forbidden History, Mysteries of Alaska, something about the Rosicrucians in Oak Island and Francis Bacon for Oak Island Presents. So the television shows have been keeping me busy, and my own research into an area in the UK that I'm working with some folks to excavate in hopes of finding some artifacts. So it's been a busy time since I've seen you last.
You've been on many different programs: Forbidden History, NASA Unexplained Files, What on Earth, and Mysteries of the Abandoned is one of my favorites. But can you tell us what in your life took you in those directions?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm from Chicago, and I lived in Chicago till I was 30 or so, and always had a passion for ancient history and traveling to places that were of significance thousands and thousands of years ago. I've always been drawn to that. But I think when I moved to the UK, when I moved to England, it was just a real transformative experience for me, because everywhere you look, there's history and ancient history and megalithic history and, you know, crop circles. And I was just overwhelmed and became really, really interested in it. And I think at some point you kind of drink the bong water when it comes to all these theories, and you believe everything, and you kind of come out the other side a bit more skeptical and measured. And when I look at television, sometimes I see people not asking the right questions, not asking Occam's razor, not trying to find the rudimentary cause for something before jumping immediately to aliens. And that's why I've kind of gravitated towards that medium, because I think it's a chance to offer some insight in a level-headed way and try to reach as many people as possible in the process.
I imagine you've had some time to look at the Tic Tac video that was released by someone, but it was captured on the F-18s, and then the Navy admitted they didn't know what it was. I want to know your thoughts on that.
This is the one of the unidentified object that was seen by a number of Air Force pilots. That's what you refer to?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting. Very credible people, having seen it, reported it. And, you know, there's just no doubt that there is another element, and a huge element, of advanced technology and civilization and contact that is going on that is being suppressed. We all know that, and we all speculate as to when disclosure is going to come. And I happen to think that, and I say this respectfully, with someone like Trump in the White House, who's kind of a bull in a china shop, maybe he's the one. Maybe he's going to spill it. Maybe he's going to, either in office or once he's out of office, just tell the world the extent of the contact that is taking place around the globe.
Well, I have to agree with you. Maybe he will do that for us. Who knows? But I've always wanted to ask you, though, and I know you've been able to travel the world, but during your travels, have you witnessed anything, you know, anything strange in the sky?
Well, yeah, I've traveled to a lot of remote places and experienced and felt a lot of, you know, I suppose you would say transcendent or spiritual things. But in terms of unidentified, you know, I had one particular experience not terribly long ago, when I was in Edinburgh, Scotland, and I had a terrible headache. My God, I never get headaches, but this was beyond a headache. It was, the severity was so great, I can't even put it in the terms. So I got on the plane, and I'm sitting in the aisle seat. I'm tall. I always take the aisle seat. And about 15 minutes into the flight from Edinburgh to London, I looked out the window and there was this cigar-shaped silver thing. It must have been maybe 30 feet long, but shaped like a triangle. And it was going slightly faster than the plane. And I just punched the guy next to me and pointed out the window. And he missed it. But I saw it for a good 10 seconds. And so two things. One is, you know, did I see it? Because something about my consciousness at the time was, you know, I was so in pain and my brain was just being so taxed for some reason by this headache that maybe I morphed into a consciousness where you can see this stuff that's always there that otherwise you can't see. And when I mentioned it to my good friend, Nick Pope, Nick said, you know, that really matches like the first description of a UFO back in the 50s. That's what it was. It was that triangular shaped silver thing, craft. And so I always found that was peculiar and has led me to, you know, kind of wonder about the dimensional aspect of our existence. Is it, you know, we're tuned in, you know, if I'm in Chicago and I'm tuned in WXRT, WGN is also playing, but I'm not tuned into that frequency. So did the headache allow me to morph into another frequency?
You're not the only one that said that. I mean, many people now believe that UFOs have a lot to do with consciousness. So it's interesting that you brought that up. I know you've also traveled to Egypt. Have you seen anything strange, or has someone came to you and said, hey, I saw, you know, something strange, you know, hovering over the pyramids there?
Oh, all the time. I was just in Egypt last weekend and it was an extremely aborted, dangerous expedition. Shouldn't have been, but it was. Ever so quickly, we're going with Discovery Science from Cairo to the Sinai, where I was going to stand on top of Mount Sinai and nearby Serabit El Kadim and talk about Moses and Akhenaten and the real Ten Commandments and the real Mount Sinai. But 20 military checkpoints later, they told us in not too friendly terms, go home. Don't care what permits you have. So they don't want people filming in the Sinai. It's a military zone. It's really a shame. But anyway, yeah, I mean, all the time. I wish I was more psychically attuned. I don't think that I'm sensitive. I wish I was, but I've been with a lot of people and I've been to all the places in the Eastern and the Western and the Nile and the Delta and the Sinai. And so I've been all over Egypt, 15, 20 times and feel like I've got a sense of it. And I think it's all there for somebody who has the ability to kind of connect with that other level of consciousness. And I have to a fault when I'm in some place like Saqqara, I'm excited. I'm really wound up and I'm taking photos. I'm examining reliefs and I'm in a heightened state of excitement, which I think is the wrong way to be. I wish I could just be centered and relaxed and try to zone into those moments of meditation when these other layers of consciousness can reveal themselves.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into Hollow Earth. I love hearing about it. It's a fascinating subject. I want to know, first of all, is there evidence or something in history that has said that a civilization was capable of living deep inside the planet?
Well, you know, the Hollow Earth is something I've always been interested in, and I've always been interested in a lot of subjects, but I've never been inspired to present and research and talk about them because, well, there's just only so much time and other people are, you know, they're the experts on giants or they're the experts on this or that, but I've kind of been pushed into the Hollow Earth, due to having been contacted by somebody who claimed to be a member of the Illuminati. Now, I've been a chairman of various historical societies and have chaired all dozens of meetings where we have all kinds of people claiming to be all sorts of, you know, I'm the direct descendant of Mary Magdalene. I am the real Jesus Christ. I am the real this. Everyone has a grandiose concept of who they are. And I've heard this Illuminati thing too many times before. So I got to know this guy. I met him in person. He predicted some events that would happen. I better not say that on radio because I might get authorities contacting me, but these things came true. And I got I crossed over the chasm and I believe it. I believe this guy is part of an echelon of initiates, call it Illuminati, call it whatever you want. But his connection to that Illuminati group is the fact that he is from the inner earth. And it sounds fantastic, right? It does. Of course it does. So he has revealed a number of things to me and pointed me towards various places, and asked me to research this or that. So because of him, I have gotten immersed, into it. And as I've gotten deeper and deeper into it, I've just been amazed to learn what, the thought leaders over time have had to say. I mean, scientists like Edmund Halley talking about the fact that there are multiple levels of life inside the Earth, and we may be one of them. We may be part of the inner Earth, and that the Aurora Borealis comes out of the poles. You know, the poles are one of the most interesting aspects of the hollow earth theory. And, you know, we can come on to that later. But, you know, Euler is another one. These are famous scientists who could still be persecuted for the heretical nature of what they're saying. But they're talking about the hollow earth and having an interior sun, a black sun. Johann Gauss talks about it. As well, and signs, and the list goes on of all these people, scientists, thought leaders, who theorize that there's life under Earth, and there's oceans, and there's rivers, and there's suns.
Unreal. Now you've got my attention. I don't know how far or how deeply you can get into it, but why do you think this person chose to contact you?
You know, originally, he happens to be in media, and, you know, he said, I like your TV work. Have a look at my LinkedIn. If there's anybody on there you want me to introduce you to, let me know. And it's a bunch of A-listers. And I'm just, no, I'm not in that league. I wouldn't know where to begin. And that's when he said, you know, you should think of me like this. I'm going to tell you who I am. And if you think that's nuts, then you don't need to talk to me. So he told me, and of course I didn't believe it, and I've come to believe it. And so it's very, very, very interesting. He recounted stories, as a young boy, in England, having his mother and father drive him in a car, into a barn. Barn was opened by men, drove the car into the barn onto a metal hydraulic lift, and the car would be lowered 200 or 300 meters into the earth. And on the other side, he remembers seeing men, tall men in black dated suits with sunglasses. What does that sound like? Men in black. And they're wearing the sunglasses because any chance of getting light reflection will be hazardous to their health. And he describes this huge crystal, the shape, I mean, it's a massive crystal, like a football pitch long, that is somehow also a map of the earth. And he said he remembered that it had some kind of continent off of Ireland that no longer exists. And the people down there used to joke with his mother that, like so many of the other children, they were going to take him because he looked very desirable. And that caused, of course, great friction with his mother, who protected him in the brief times that he recalled being down there. So I better not say too much about this. I don't want to expose the gentleman or jeopardize his status. But I've just come to realize that I think there, you know, just like on the planet, we have Asia and Africa and the Americas. There are many continents inside the Earth, and in the UK, and perhaps in the United States, I'm not sure if this is traveled, but Brian Cox is a professor at the University of Manchester, and he does a lot of television for the BBC, and he was just talking about the fact he's an expert in all things planetary, and you know, we send these rovers all throughout space, and we never see life on other planets. He speculates, what if life on top of the planet, i.e. Earth, is anomalous and unique to Earth? What if life exists beneath the planet and all the other planets? And I think that's a really interesting hypothesis. And especially when you look at the poles, anyone who's listening now, Google NASA's redacted images of the North and South Poles. And it's not just NASA images, it's ESA, the Weather Bureau, it's the Russian Mirror. They've all taken pictures of the Earth, and the poles are wide open. Open for hundreds of miles.
What do you mean? You mean like people can actually see it?
People can see it. It just looks like a big hole. I mean, right now, it looks like a big circular hole, hundreds of miles wide. And if you look at the NASA images of Saturn, same thing, but they're now redacting them. Saturn has, you'll take a look at any Saturn images, they have like a hexagon at the poles. And today's images of Earth, it's all whited out. Oh, it's snowy, it's glacier. But you look at the ones from the 60s and 70s, and there's a big gaping hole, which is entirely consistent with what Admiral Byrd had to say on his, you know, very, very famous flight into Antarctica. And you know, it doesn't happen. You don't notice immediately. You don't go through a stargate and all of a sudden you're in the hollow Earth. It's very, very, very gradual. And he reports seeing all kinds of incredible stuff, and he kept a diary of it. So at you know, the first thing he notices is that the equipment starts to malfunction, and then all of a sudden he sees lush green fields. You know, how can that be? Then he sees a mammoth, which is so interesting. It's Jules Verne, an initiate who writes about, of course, the inner Earth in his famous novel, talks about mammoth inside the Earth. And then all of a sudden, Byrd gets closer and closer, and his plane is taking control of and landed, and he meets with the head of that region of the inner Earth. It's all fascinating. And if you know anything about Byrd, I mean, just go look at a picture of this guy, and you ask yourself, is this somebody who would lie to me? Is this somebody who would fabricate? I think not. Finally, you know, his final, he kept a diary the whole time that his son later after his death published, because he did an interview right after this flight into the hollow Earth when he was in, I think it was Chile. And he said, you know, we are at risk of being attacked from both poles. You wouldn't believe the technology they have, blah, blah, blah. And his final comment is, I have seen the land beyond the pole, that center of the great unknown. And what does Jim Carrey, who's probably one of the politicians in the past few decades that I look back on, and I think, you know, I think he was a real statesman. I think he was, not one of the crooks. and what's the last thing he did as Secretary of Defense, the last day in his job, he goes to Antarctica. Why would he do that? So I think this notion, the Nazis seem to know about this, right? The Nazis, you can Google it. They have really authentic documents that describe if you have a U-boat, if you have a submarine, here's how you get there. You go over here, then you go there, then you go this deep, then you turn left. And there's letters from people they've sent out from the North Pole saying, we're not coming back. This is fantastic. This is, you know, an advanced form of civilization. Why would we come back? And the Nazis were obsessed with, you know, that part of the world. And of course, nobody can go there. You can't go to the North and South Poles.
Is that very telling to you? I mean, you can go there, but you can't go beyond the edge of it. You know, you can't go to the interior of it. So why do you think they put those restrictions in place?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. WikiLeaks published some photos, and they're interesting, and they show strange things flying through the sky. You know, what if, you know, everything we thought about UFOs was wrong? What if they're coming from inside the planet? What if all these devices that are drawn on the reliefs in India and in South America, these men in these capsules, these Mayan-looking reliefs, what if that's all coming from the inner Earth? It really does change everything. And when you think about the fact that the moon is got to be man-made, if it was any further or closer from the Earth, if it was any bigger or smaller, it wouldn't work. And it doesn't rotate. What objects exist in space that aren't rotating? The only attempt by scientists to explain that is it's rotating at the same speed of the Earth. That's why it appears not to be rotating. No, it doesn't rotate. That's why there's the dark side of the moon. And so somebody with some great skills put it there. I don't believe it was captured atmospherically and just happened to be the right size, not bigger, not smaller, not further, not closer, just there. And it doesn't rotate. So that's the first hint that, there, you know, you're trying to sustain some, you're trying to create some sustainability for this planet and the civilizations that exist beneath it.
Very interesting. I don't believe the moon is a natural object. From all the research that I've read, it seems like it was actually brought there. And I've also read that in ancient texts, they remember a time when the moon wasn't even there at all.
Yeah. No, I could believe that. I could believe that. And you know, the Earth has been around, what is it, 4.5 billion years. And it's just arrogant and infantile to think that we are the first civilized inhabitants. And we don't see any cities or there isn't tech. Well, there is. You know, what are the things that we built in the past 100 years will be around in 1,000 years, let alone several hundred thousand years. You look at Michael Kremer and all of his work, Klaus Dana and all of his work. Civilization doesn't go back 10, 20, 30,000 years. It goes back millions of years. There's that fantastic, admittedly tainted example of Javier Cabrera, who now has a museum of these black precious stones that show humans with dinosaurs. And sadly, the people who sold them these stones, when interviewed by von Daniken, said, we made them up. Yeah, we looked at magazines, we looked at comic books, and we made them up because he was really keen. The doctor was keen and he had money. And the whole thing was invalidated. But then much later, those same people existed, confessed to having fabricated that because they didn't want to go to jail. They have families. They would go to prison for having sold artifacts. But they did say, we found images on these black stones of humans with dinosaurs, and we gave them to the doctor. The doctor was fanatical. He was blown away. So we replicated and faked some more of them. So unfortunately, the really interesting proof points of this are tainted with you know, situations like that. But I tend to believe Javier Cabrera and you know, who would create images of dinosaurs with humans if that wasn't something that was contemporaneous?
Right, right. Very interesting. Thank you for bringing that up. Let's go back to Admiral Byrd, if you don't mind. Have you found anything in your research that says back then they were speculating that the Aurora Borealis was caused by the openings at each pole?
I don't recall that he said anything about that. I know the scientist, Euler, I think, I have to check my notes, but I think it was Euler who said the Aurora Borealis is coming from these holes, these entrances, the poles in particular, but not only the poles, in the inner Earth. And, you know, he's very specific in his diaries, and shows just a real incredulous, you know, he can't believe what he's seen. He sees a crystalline city with rose colored light that's coming out of the walls. He meets, from memory, he meets with the sort of head of the inner Earth in that domain. And as his plane is being taken control of and landed on his behalf somehow, the planes next to him have swastikas on them. This is 1945, so God only knows what that, you know, what conclusion we should draw from that. Did the Nazis go there and become part of this inner Earth regime? You know, the swastika was, you know, a very ancient sacred symbol long before the Nazis adopted it. But he was also told about these, I think it was pronounced, Flugerids, and they sound a lot like Foo Fighters. And it's these Foo Fighters that we have seen, not only during the war, but in recent time. You had a reference to one earlier, and I just did an episode of Forbidden History where we watched a videotape of, I think it's the pilot is Ryan Powell, if I remember his name correctly, really credible young man, talking about these things they saw on their satellite, and they recorded on the video in front of their planes, and they're sort of like these cube-shaped balls moving around erratically. So, you know, this is the Foo Fighters of war. And Byrd describes having seen the same thing. So it's interesting. And what I am interested in, I'm interested in all of that. But Byrd was told that when the world gets to be a better place, for an oversimplified explanation, then the people in the inner Earth will reveal their secrets, and the secrets and the artifacts and the true history of Earth, which are buried beneath the Earth and beneath the oceans like a checkerboard. And so that is what my project restoration, our project restoration, my colleague and I is about, is locating these deposits and excavating them. And as grandiose as that sounds, we think we have the technology to do that. And I am not the brains of that technology. My colleague is. He has the skill. He has the technology. And I've seen it work in the Philippines. I've seen it work in Iran. I've seen it work on Crete, and I've seen preliminary results here in England. So it is my goal for 2020 to absolutely validate this technology by finding some of these deposits. And we're not talking like Knights Templar necessarily. We're talking much older deposits. Our research indicates that Knights Templars, yes, but also civilizations before them, long before them, 10, 11,000 years ago, have gone to the effort to acquire and preserve relics from the past 50,000 years. And just to make sure that they don't fall into our hands until they think we're ready for it.
Makes sense. I want to focus a little more on Admiral Byrd and what he recorded during his journey. Did he not say that these beings were concerned about our use of atomic energy? Did you find that in your research somewhere?
Yeah, they were very concerned about us. And they cited their frustration, if I remember correctly, that we were heading that way, that we had all already begun to demonstrate a really irresponsible use of that technology. And they have tried it. They tried to intercede in the war, but were shot at. And they shouldn't be surprised that they were shot at if they're in these alien looking crafts. They should forgive us for thinking that, somehow they were the enemy, but absolutely concerned about our use of nuclear technology, which is why it's so interesting that you've got the U.S. Secretary of Defense going there during the last week of Obama's administration.
Yeah, I wonder why. I mean, he's not the only one, obviously. But why would he go on his last day? I mean, what are you going to see before you leave office? How interesting is that?
Yeah. And so there's contact. There's contact with, I think, the inner Earth for sure. And so if Earth has all these civilizations beneath it, and there's more, the Russian borehole, we did a show on that for What on Earth. Took 20 years to dig this hole 8 miles into the ground. They found oceans bigger than any ocean above Earth, and they found fossils. What are fossils doing 8 miles into the Earth? So, science is validating what these earlier great scientists have theorized, is that there could be life forms beneath the Earth. There's oceans and streams and evidently sun. But Byrd's diary kind of hints at the fact that it's going to get worse before it gets better. And only when we've sort of annihilated ourselves will these, he was told, they will come forward and help revive our culture and race. And to me, that has like a Viracocha sort of sound to it. So were these great sages who taught us how to build pyramids around 3000 BC all around the world, were they from the inner Earth? Every tradition has, every culture, every single culture, everyone has got a legend about the inner Earth. And is that just a folktale? I don't think so. Really, in London, gosh, what was this? A month ago, maybe no more than 6 weeks ago, there was a really strange occurrence of all around London, north and south, east and west, and the surrounding suburbs, of windows being smashed, things being knocked over. And they claim it was because of a plane that was flying over England that hadn't identified itself. So two jet fighters were given permission to break the sound barrier. And the breaking of the sound barrier caused windows to break and things to fall over and all kinds of chaos. Well, the Concorde used to fly and break the sound barrier, and none of that would happen. And my contact insinuated that it was because of a disruption in the inner Earth, which I would find more credible to some extent. And the sound, there's, you know, people, CCTV and other people have recorded the sound. It just sounds peculiar, like an implosion sort of blow. So all of these people from legends of promising to return, Viracocha is the King Arthur, Jesus Christ, are these real people or archetypes of sages from the inner earth who are promising to return when we're needed again?
Okay, I want to go back to what you said when we were discussing our misguided use of atomic energy. I wonder if you thought about this. Some of these ancient structures that have been found buried, I'm wondering if they were buried on purpose because some of these civilizations that had technology beyond anything that we have today didn't want us to find it and figure out what it was and end up destroying ourselves with it. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's entirely possible. And so on a couple levels, there is technology, artifacts, and documentation buried around the earth, literally like a chessboard, just like, the Dalai Lama is supposed to be the terrestrial spokesperson for the king of the world who lives beneath the earth. And in, I think it was 1985, he spoke and he had this amazing quote that spoke about the fact that it's a real physical place, but unless your karmic connection is just right, i.e. you came from there, you're not going to be able to see it. You're not going to be able to experience it, but it's real. And so they've buried things around the earth that we won't find because we would misuse it. But then you have sites like Göbekli Tepe, which was bubble wrapped and buried intentionally, according to archaeologists. And that's really interesting. A lot of the people who have interpreted it, a lot of people have interpreted, you know, those pillars as telling a story about the, you know, end of days, about a great cataclysm that was coming. So it's really interesting. You look at the Ramayana and you look at all the Indian text and they speak of and show images of these incredible fighting machines. And I've never been satisfied as much as I love to look for Occam's razor. You know, what's the most logical explanation? Okay, it wasn't that. What's the next most logical explanation? Well, when you look at the reliefs at the top of Dendera, the Egyptian temple in Dendera, you have a helicopter, you have this, all this high-tech looking craft, and they describe, and it's just perfectly drawn as though someone drew it today. It looks like a helicopter. It looks like a fighting machine. And Egyptologists explain it that it's hieroglyphics that have been written over, then written over. Oh, really? Why? I don't think so. Why are we so afraid to say we don't understand? Why, you know, is it because, and I suppose this might be answering my own question, is that historically archaeologists have lost their job by saying scholars lose their job as well, by saying anything that doesn't fall in line with the conventional thinking.
All right. So since you're across the pond, I want to talk to you about Stonehenge and Avery. And I thought I saw a program where you were at Easter Island. Maybe I didn't, but for those that have visited the area, they may know, may not know, that sometimes the majority of these stones are underground, you know, so they're really, really big. They're just enormous. I was wanting to ask you, you've been over there and you've seen the massiveness of them in person. Why do you think they build them so big?
Yeah, I mean, Avery, you mentioned, is one of my very favorite, and everyone flocks to Stonehenge, which is remarkable. And I'm glad that Stonehenge has received the notoriety it has, and that people appreciate it now as a ritualistic complex that's not just a bunch of stones, monoliths in a circle, but there's a processional pathway. There's bodies being put on boats and sent down the River Thames, or going down the circular path of the Thames, and they get to land and they're taken. You know, it's a place of ceremony. Just like Giza is not the quote unquote Great Pyramid, it's the Wall of Crows, it's the Sphinx, it's the whole underground complex of tunnels that probably was used for the Pharaoh's ritual to practice transversing the Duat in the afterlife.
And they've used LIDAR to find bodies up under some of those stones as well, right?
Yeah. So these stones, Stonehenge, Avery in particular, and also, as you rightfully say, Easter Island, have these huge gargantuan stones. Now, Avery is like this double stone circle that's this solar and lunar calendar locked together, and has the only pyramid in the UK in Silbury Hill, and these ancient burial mounds of West Kent Long Barrel and Devil's Den. Really fantastic. Again, it's a complex. It's a ritual complex of stones going right up in the shape of a dragon, literally. One on each side, you know, rounded on one side for the female, straight and pointed on one side for the male. Processional paths for druids or pre-druid people to come up to the center. And I think what you're alluding to is the size of these stones. Have we missed a trick in thinking that actually there's something beneath them in terms of, you know, a burial? And my colleague, who likes to keep a low profile, I'd mention his name, but he would rather be anonymous. He has applied this scanning technology that he has to Easter Island, and no one's finding the real deal because they're not looking deep enough. Just not looking deep enough. And there are tombs at each of those moai of the ancient kings, probably of Lemuria. And I, you know, just gobsmacked that nobody has dug deeper. So the actual statues go down deeper into the ground than they go above ground, but the tomb itself is far further down. And we hope, we're told we have permission to have a shot at one of them to excavate. And, you know, that's something for the next couple of years that we would love to do. And it means, you know, digging much deeper than has been dug before. And to do it with empathy, you know, you watch one of the shows, I won't mention their name, has one of the television channels has a show about the Philippines and looking for Japanese treasure there. You're not going to go into these sites with bulldozers and a bunch of Rambo guys and dig for 5 days and get the treasure. It doesn't work that way. And these sites are as crazy as it sounds. They're protected. And you have to, you know, commune with the entity that is protecting them. And you have to be worthy. You have to state your intentions, and you better, those intentions better be about honoring history as opposed to fame and fortune.
No doubt the discovery of those bodies up underneath that was amazing. One last question. I really want to respect the connection that you have with this guy that talks about inner earth, but I want to know, has he mentioned anything about ever letting you see pictures of inner earth, or even letting you see video or better yet, you having the opportunity to go there?
He hasn't. He's given me a lot of insight, a lot of stories that I better not repeat. Amazing, just amazing. You know, I've learned, and I do believe that the world is a far, far darker and demented place than we care to believe it is. Maybe thinking of a God like we think of a God. What if the wrong God won? You know, look at the state of the planet and the starvation and the way people treat each other. And nothing changes. Just same every generation after every generation. What if the wrong God won? Lucifer, the bringer of light. Doesn't sound like a bad chap, does it? I have asked, as ridiculous as it sounds, you know, I have access to television. I don't have any skeletons in my closet, really. Let me be the person who, let me go there. I want to go. I want to go see it. I want to go. Let me be the person who perhaps can strike a bridge between the inner and the outer. I'm as outlandish as that sounds. I've asked for that opportunity, and he claims that he can't orchestrate that, but he will let that be known. So it sounds ridiculous. And when I hear stuff like this on programs like this, I just think, yeah, right, bollocks. But when it sort of happens to you and someone's earned your trust, you tend to give it the benefit of the doubt. And I certainly do. So I'm holding out hope that maybe one day soon I'll be shown.
I really hope that happens for you. I would love to hear about it. Before we go, Andrew, please take a moment to tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or anything else you're working on.
Well, thanks so much. AndrewGoff.com is my website, and I have, I'm also editor of the Heretic magazine. Now, I've sort of paused the pause button on that just because life's been so, so busy, but a lot of my articles, actually all of my articles in the Heretic magazine are on my website now, but there's dozens and dozens of others. So for a couple dollars, you get some state-of-the-art design and some wonderful articles about all the amazing researchers around the world. Coming in the spring is a two-hour documentary that I'm in on Japanese treasure in the Philippines. And so I'll be publishing a new article about that in February. So look for that. I have 40 history articles on my website, and I don't have any books. You can't order them on Amazon. I've had a day job that's business my whole life that's kept me from really taking the time to write it all down. But my articles are 5,000 to 10,000 words. And I'd like to think that there's more facts kind of, you know, sandwiched in those 10,000 words than your 150,000 word books that you have to buy. I try to condense it right down. So please have a look at those. And I hope we can speak again later in the year.
Fantastic. Many blessings to you. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anytime.
All right. So that's a wrap for this one. And I want to thank my special guest, Andrew Goff, for joining me. If you're interested in anything that he researches as far as history is concerned, and he looks at all of it, make sure you go and visit his website. It's andrewgoff.com, and Goff is spelled G-O-U-G-H. I will have him back in the future. I'll also let you know if he sends me any type of information with any updates about Inner Earth. I'm really interested on where that's going to go for him. Just amazing. And remember, if you like true crime, please do us the favor and listen over there, okay? So the X Podcast is now called 7, and it's a true crime podcast. And I have a ton of amazing true crime authors, psychologists, and people that work in forensics, and detectives that were actually involved in some of the most prolific murder investigations of the 20th century. You're really going to love it if you like true crime. So again, it's called Seven. I want to thank you for being a loyal patron. We couldn't do this without you. Please tell other people if they may like this type of these subjects that we cover. Tell them about it. Please share it. Okay. That's how we grow the show. So when they see a friend or relative that's enthusiastic about a podcast, you know, they're more likely to listen or try it. Okay. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, the Mysterious Radio team, and you again. I am your host, K-Town. I want you to have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.